Welcome to the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. And you can always listen at PRN.FM. One of the great things about Progressive Radio Network is that you can tune in to the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z every Tuesday at 10 a.m. or anytime you want on the web at PRN.FM. And we get so many phone calls, emails, texts, Facebook updates, and you can find us at Facebook, The Natural Nurse, about the content and shows that we have here on Progressive Radio Network. And as I have been lecturing around the Florida region for the last few months, lucky me, I'm so happy to be in beautiful Florida at this time of year. There's been so many people coming up and saying, gee, I heard that you were going to lecture here by going to your website at naturalnurse.com, clicking on schedules, and seeing that you'll be right here in my local area. So I invite you to do that as well. I'll be in Texas next week, California after that. And then I will be going as a participant to a fabulous event back here in Florida. And that brings on board our guest for today, Emily Ruff, professional herbalist. And we're going to talk about her conference, which is the Florida Herbal Conference at floridaherbalconference.org. And five or six people who have heard about it through me have signed up, so I'll see you guys there as well. And all the other people interested in the highest level of teaching of herbal medicine right here in Florida. Emily is the director of the Florida School of Holistic Living, as well as the Florida Herbal Conference. She is a community herbalist and health educator, and her studies have taken her around three continents, where she has studied under indigenous healers of many traditions. And she completed apprenticeships with people you know of, because you've heard them right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, famous herbalists such as Rosemary Gladstore. And the roots of Emily's studies were passed down during her childhood, wandering in the wilderness of Central Florida. So she is an expert in the herbs in this area, with her father, who was a botanist and professor. And Emily's academic studies include ethnobotany at the University of Central Florida, and flower essences through the Bach Foundation. She is frequently published author and lectures throughout Florida and the United States. And she also has her own product line called Arenda Herbal, which provides the community with herbal preparations made from organic and wild-crafted local ingredients. So we're so happy to have Emily on today as our guest. Welcome, Emily.
Thanks so much, Ellen. It's so lovely to be here today.
Oh, I'm glad they found you at the correct phone number, because I know you're very, very busy. It's a buzz there at the Florida Holistic Living School as you prepare for the Florida Herbal Conference.
Absolutely. We're really delighted to take some time out of the day to talk to your listeners about the event and herbs in Florida and just have a chance to connect.
Well, let's talk about your background. You said that your father was a botanist and a professor. Was he working at one of the local universities in Florida?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was. He taught at both the universities as well as the community colleges in the area where I grew up, which was Marion County, the Ocala area, known to a lot of people for being sort of the southern horse country. A lot of folks travel back and forth between the Kentucky area and the Ocala area raising horses. So a really great place to grow up and be really surrounded with a lot of land, a lot of open space, and so a perfect place to be a plant lover as well and get to enjoy that open space.
You know, I think most people, especially we have many New York listeners, when they think about Florida, they're thinking about not necessarily open space. They're thinking about hotel after hotel after hotel along the row of the beaches and then gated communities. But really, that's just a teeny part of what Florida is about.
It's true. We definitely have a broad misconception. And to be fair, a lot of Florida is absolutely very developed, very touristy, very urban, and very sprawling. in that urban and suburban nature. But what has really kept me continuing my work in Florida, despite having traveled to some really exotic and beautiful locations around the world, is that the ecosystems of Florida are incredibly unique. And when you get into the swamps and when you get into the oak hammocks, you really realize that the plant life as well as the animal life here in Florida is quite a treasure, very diverse. And so certainly has been a really beautiful opportunity for me to remain connected to my roots by working with the plants here, and quite a delight to introduce students and visitors every week to the beautiful, lush ecosystems that we have to offer here, even though they may be dwindling in their size and in their frequency around the state, there are still some incredible pockets left.
And it does vary tremendously as you go north and south in the state of Florida.
It's
really
another
big difference.
Absolutely. It's another super unique opportunity to work with plants in this state, because unlike most states in the country, we have three distinct zones, distinct growing zones. We have, as you know, the tropical southern Florida region, and then the northern Florida region is quite temperate, much like you would find in places like Georgia and Alabama and the Carolinas. Where I live in central Florida is a beautiful area where those two climates meet, and we consider it subtropical. So most of the year, the tropical plants that thrive in the southern part of the state really do well. And then in the wintertime, like right now, we have temperate plants that pop their heads above the ground that we rarely get to see the rest of the year in southern Florida, never gets to see. So it's an incredible intersection of those two climates, and pretty rare opportunity to be within a day's drive of completely different growing zones from your home. So very, very unique aspect of the state.
It's true, and I've spent a lot of time studying the different kinds of growing situations here in Florida, because I live in Deerfield Beach, which is definitely further south, although it gets even more tropical if you go about another hour south to Miami. And then I lived for several years in Gainesville, Florida, and I was very involved with Payne's Prairie. I'm sure you're pretty familiar with that.
Absolutely. Such a beautiful, beautiful ecosystem up there.
Yeah, Payne's Prairie, they actually have a wild little patch of wild horses and buffalo roaming around. You know, I guess they've just been let loose there. And there's definitely an array of plants that you don't see in southern Florida.
Absolutely.
Now, one thing is when you decide to wander through nature in Florida, it's a little bit different than if you do so in the Northeast, because we do have a couple of poisonous plant and animal species in the Northeast. Some areas have rattlesnakes. It just so happens that Long Island, where my other home is, we have no poisonous snakes and only really a couple of poisonous plants, most of which would only be so if you ingest it. And the only plant that causes a dermatitis in most people is poison ivy. We don't even have poison oak. So it's very limited. But boy, here in Florida, there are a lot of things that can you need to be aware of if you're going to wander around, which is why you would want to go to the Florida Herbal Conference or the Holistic Living School that you run to be an educated forager.
Absolutely. I really try to impress that upon my students as often as possible, because as many beautiful medicinal species as we have here in Florida, in part thanks to the warmer climate, we also get blessed with lots of often similar-looking species that can be, in fact, quite poisonous, as you've pointed out, in addition to the occasional coral snake and water moccasin and, you know, a lot of those unique species that we must be very respectful of and careful of. So, yeah, it's definitely sort of gets more into kind of like entering the jungle, if you will.
Really, well, let's talk about, you know, have you ever been to the Mount Botanical Gardens, M-O-U-N-T?
No, I have not.
Oh, well, you'll have that great joy one day. And it's in the West Palm Beach area. It's actually run by the USDA. the United States Department of Agriculture, but it's open to the public. And it's a fabulous, fabulous botanical gardens where they bring in a lot of species that don't even grow here in Florida, as well as ones that do. So I'll tell you a little story that happened to me there that day, because that's what I do on my free time, as well as professionally. I'm sure that's true for you as well, Emily, that when you're off, you're doing herbal stuff, and you're doing natural medicine stuff, because it's like who you are. It's not something that we do for a living, and then we just do something else for fun, although, of course, you might do music and other things, but I would imagine you spend many of your days off in some kind of pursuit of more knowledge about the natural world.
That's the truth, absolutely.
So we're kind of like very focused and narrow in some ways, but nonetheless, I went to Mounts Botanical Gardens, and when you go there, enjoy it. Now, one of the things they do is they bring in a lot of very strange plants from different areas of the world, like Africa, as well as the Caribbean, and they grow quite well in Florida. So I'll just give a little story of what happened to me. I actually was going around there early in the morning one day, and I started getting attacked by the kind of mosquito that carries dengue fever, which they're like black and white, like zebras. Mm-hmm. You know what they look like? They're kind of cute in a way. They have striped legs, black and white legs. So I was really getting attacked by them, and I did not have any kind of natural oils like citronella or something to keep the bugs away. I would normally use that instead of, let's say, DEET spray, as I'm sure you probably would too. And they were really attacking me. So I noticed that many of the plants, because as herbalists, and I'm sure you teach this, to help you learn to identify a plant, don't you usually describe to people to crush the leaf and smell it?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So why would you tell people to do that if they were learning about new plants?
Well, there's such a distinction about the aromatic properties of the plants, looking at those essential oils, and also, sometimes certain plants will have a certain color that they emit, but definitely, this distinct scent as we're looking at plants like camphor and citronella growing here near us, that's going to really show a difference, especially in Central Florida. Camphor looks very similar to like an Asian cherry or a cherry laurel. And so they often get confused. Even, their botanical key is a little bit similar. And then when you crush them, one smells very different from the other. So,
yes. So herbalists get very into crushing. And so, of course, I was doing that, especially as I was learning. By the way, the gentleman who took me to that garden, his name is Mark, and because of our trip there, he's going to be a participant at your up-and-coming Florida Herbal Conference. So he's very excited about that, too. Yeah, he's registered. So, I noticed that many of these plants are aromatic, and even though I wasn't particularly familiar with them, I know the kind of plants that will keep insects away. There are many strong aromatics that most insects don't like. So I took the initiative, and this is after being an herbalist since 1964, and now it's 2014, so I would say I've been doing this a few years. And I was crushing the leaves and said, let me rub these like on my neck and my ankles to try to stop this deluge of mosquitoes that are attacking me. And I did so. And Mark, who's much more knowledgeable in your Florida plants, said to me in a very soft voice, I think he should have said it louder, some of those might be irritants.
Mm.
Well, I ignored it and put it on anyway. And do you know, I broke out that night in a really intense dermatitis. My whole neck got very, very swollen. I got a little worried because it felt like it was actually going inside my throat. But I did natural antihistamines like vitamin C and bioflavonoids and rose hips. And it's good when we know how to take care of ourselves naturally. And really, the rash, to tell you the truth, now it did go completely down, but there's big, giant kind of black patches of dead skin. It was intense. So just to say, it's so good to actually get training. when we go out in the field. This isn't like to scare anybody, but just to bring respect to the traditional knowledge about plant medicine.
Absolutely.
So luckily that's all cleared up, and it was nice to know, you know, I reached for my aloe plant and all that kind of stuff.
Of course. I'm glad it wasn't any worse than dermatitis.
Right. But just to say that there's, you know, everything is about balance and knowledge. So you can't just go out there and eat any old plant. That's why it's so great to go to some place like the Florida Herbal Conference and begin to learn how to interact safely, effectively, and correctly with the plants that just grow around us all the time. Now, one thing that I think is very important to realize is that, you know, sometimes I'll say, if you want to eat seaweed, you can just go to the water and get the seaweed and rinse it. And people will say things like, well, isn't it polluted in the water off the Florida coast? But I wonder, Emily, what your feelings are, because if the seaweed is gathered, let's say, in Japan, where Fukushima is, but then it's dried and in a nice plastic package hanging in the store, how much better is that?
Right. People certainly have no, you know, problem depending on the packaging. And I know for me, as the, you know, the very best I can discern from the research that I've done, which has been pretty extensive in the, especially last 6 to 12 months since the Fukushima disaster, has really indicated to me that, especially looking at the jet currents and the flow of the water, that it's certainly much safer to be sourcing both seafood and seaweed from the eastern coast, from the Atlantic coast. And I, you know, certainly want to try to keep in perspective to things that happened a few years ago, like with the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, and continue to stay in close contact with my colleagues who are scientists on the coasts that are, you know, checking the water pretty frequently to look at the different levels, you know, both of potential chemicals as well as nutrients in the water. But certainly after conferring with a lot of my colleagues who are working at the universities here in the science fields, I feel a lot safer to harvest the seaweeds here than I would even out in California at this point.
And myself as well. And that's from a chemical nature. But what about the fabulous interaction in terms of your own personal energy when you wildcraft or pick your own food versus getting it in plastic packaging? That's something that's not even measurable except by, let's say, radionics and energy medicine.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, one thing that I really try to impress upon my students is the importance of practicing bioregional herbalism. First and foremost, because we have a relationship to our environment, and if we're working with plants that also have a relationship with that same environment, then there is, you know, that energetic influence that we share. And then there's so much meaning to working with the plants, or, you know, in this case, the seaweeds that we may be harvesting ourselves, and really sharing that relationship. The roots of natural medicine come from a time when people really had no choice but to harvest their own plants. There certainly wasn't a health food store or an apothecary that they could go pick up a packaged product. So it was largely out of necessity that we were living very close to the earth and harvesting plants in that direct connection. And for me, there's so much about that living relationship where I can honor where the plants are coming from. I can really feel connected to Mother Earth. I can feel connected to those healing energies. And I can give in a sense a prayer of gratitude or a meditation of thanks while I'm working with that medicine. And for me, that's a big part of the healing, both personally and then also what I can share with my clients and with my students when I then distribute those products and those preparations for healing benefits of others. And so it's a big part of what we work with at the school, is really trying to keep people connected to the roots of this practice. There's so much, as you well know, so much science that is completely fascinating, intellectually interesting, and can help guide our work as to which herbs are best suited for which conditions. But the roots of that practice, I think, are really important to remain a part of our knowledge and remain a part of our work, just as much as, you know, keeping up to date with the latest scientific studies. Another thing for me that's important in teaching herbalism kind of from that bioregional perspective where we are connecting with the plants at our back doors, that we can have a better sense of how healthy those plant communities are when we can see the plant communities versus harvesting something from another region of the world, like the Amazon, for instance, and having no sense of how the harvest of that medicine is impacting the local environment from which it comes, much less the people that live in those regions that might themselves rely on that medicine. And there's such a disconnect in this globalized world when we're importing and exporting and sourcing medicines from a different hemisphere. So for me, it's been that's been another part of it, is not just that personal relationship with nature that we get to bring into our practice when we pick our own herbs, but also that we really get to make a choice and see from a very informed perspective what feels safe to harvest and where we can continue to maintain the health of these plant communities. And that's been very important for me, because in the last decade, we've come to really see how endangered some of our continent's most beautiful medicinal plants are, such as ginseng and golden seal, that has been largely over-harvested and certainly don't grow in a place like Florida. And so when we're sourcing those from another area, we don't necessarily know how healthy those plant communities are, but we, of course, want to maintain those plant communities so that future generations can have the benefit of that medicine, too.
Beautifully put, Emily. We're going to take a little break now. We're going to play one of our mini radio shows called The Natural Medicine Chest for just a few minutes, and then we're going to come back and continue our discussion with Emily Ruff, professional herbalist. You can find out more at holisticlivingschool.org or floridaherbalconference.org about the conference that is about to come up right here in Florida that Emily is putting together. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss an herb we all know and love, cinnamon.
Ah, spicy, sweet smell of cinnamon. Everyone recognizes the familiar aroma of this common kitchen spice. But did you know that cinnamon is an exotic plant bark with a long history of medicinal use in many countries throughout the world? Cinnamon was listed as an herb with medicinal properties in Chinese literature as early as 2700 BC. It is described in the Chinese medical text, the Tang Materia Medica, written in 659 AD. Cinnamon also enjoys traditional use in Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing art of India. It is mentioned in the Book of Moses and has been cultivated in Ceylon and Sri Lanka since 1200 AD, where much of the world's supply is still grown.
In Europe, cinnamon was regarded as a rare and precious spice. Many pharmaceutical substances, such as cough syrups and digestive tonics, contain cinnamon. It was also used as an incense and in perfumes. According to Chamberlain, writing in France in 1887, cinnamon possesses the greatest antiseptic properties. Cinnamon is gathered from the dried inner bark of the branches of a small tropical evergreen laurel tree. The bark is peeled off, and as the pieces are dried, they curl up into quills. These are the common cinnamon sticks that are used in herb teas and for baking.
In Chinese medicine, cinnamon is one of the most widely used warming herbs to aid in circulation and digestion. It is a common ingredient in small amounts in tea used for nausea during pregnancy. It is also used following delivery to decrease hemorrhage. Cinnamon raises vitality, warms and stimulates all the vital functions of the body, counteracts congestion, improves the digestive system, relieves abdominal spasms, and aids in peripheral circulation. The essential oils contained in cinnamon include eugenol, cinnamic aldehyde, methyl eugenol, tannins, and mannitol, which give cinnamon its sweet flavor. It also contains cinzenolin and cinzenolol, which are both known insecticides.
Try putting some liquid soap and cinnamon in a spray bottle and use on plants as an organic bug repellent. Cinnamon is also included in many medicinal recipes that are used for lice, scabies, and other skin parasites. Cinnamon has antifungal, antiviral, and bactericidal activities. It has been shown to suppress E. coli, Staphylococcus, and Candida albicans.
So, listeners, the Next time you inhale that sweet, spicy aroma, remember there's more to cinnamon than meets the nose as you reach into your natural medicine chest.
To the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And you can always find us at naturalnurse.com and also by visiting us on Facebook at Facebook/Natural Nurse. And I do want to tell you that our trip is coming. You know, we do lots of trainings in the field where we actually teach about wild and edible medicinal plants and how to make them into medicine. And we also take people on a trip to the island of Jamaica, where we live in the northern coast of Jamaica with indigenous shamanic bush doctors for about a week. And you actually can get college credit by coming with us on this course. If you want to know more about that, go to naturalnurse.com, and there's a link to Echo Tours for Cures, or just go directly to Echo Tours for Cures. As a matter of fact, we are in the midst of having the itinerary solidified for this year's trip, which starts March 15th, and we have just a few openings left. So if something that sounds interesting to you, get in touch at naturalnurse.com or by going to Echo Tours for Cures, where you can see where we stay, you can see past participants. We often get a lot of professionals such as doctors and nurses, nurse practitioners, naturopathic physicians, but it's open to the public. Lay people are included. There's a lot of science-based information as well as, you know, it is fun. It's a lot of fun. So what we call it is an Echo Tours for Cures, and it's an environmental Echo Tour vacation, but it is also a learning situation. So if you'd like to know more about that, please get in touch. Our guest for today is Emily Ruff, professional herbalist, and she started both the Florida Herbal Conference, the floridaherbalconference.org. I plan to be there as a participant and learner. There is always more to learn. And she also runs ongoing the holisticlivingschool.org. So thank you so much for being our guest today, Emily.
Thanks so much for having me on, Ellen.
Now, I know you yourself, and this is one of the things that really amazed me about your bio, is that you have studied with indigenous healers in many traditions. Tell us about your adventures on that level.
So fortunate to continue, even just this past winter, to be traveling, especially in Central and South America, but also throughout North America. It has been really a calling to me to try to connect with those who are still practicing in the traditions of their ancestors. For me, my personal path to herbalism and my lineage was really cobbled together. I came from a family where perhaps there were great-grandparents that practiced herbal medicine and were still their family's primary caretakers, but by the time my parents and my generation came to be, a lot of that knowledge had been lost. But I knew when I started to study the plant medicine that it was really apparent that these were traditions that were a part of heritage, that were passed down from grandparents to grandchildren sitting on their knee, and were always really woven deeply into the fabric of a family's lineage. And so it was important for me to connect with people that were still practicing in that very connected lineage, that really could still call upon their parents and their grandparents and their great-grandparents and trace back the ancestry of the knowledge and the teachings. And so I really sought to bring my own personal educational experience into an environment where that was still alive, so that I could sort of, you know, then kind of connect with that in the urgency of holding these teachings in a very strong way so that future generations in my lineage could then carry them forth. So when I was 18, I had the beautiful opportunity to study in Guatemala, and that was really where I was very much awakened to the power of plant medicine, to the power of the herbal heritage, if you will, and to that real simplicity that there is from living off the land, both for your food and medicine, and also where medicine and food become very cultural and very spiritual, a part of the cosmology and not just some rote mechanical things that happen, you know, with meals three times a day or going to the doctor. And so that really awakened me to this passion. And then I was fortunate to continue to be able to study with indigenous healers in the southeast, in the southwest part of this country, down in Mexico, in Argentina, most recently in Peru, and even over in Europe as well, with some of the gypsy herbalists. And I feel that these particular experiences have really taught me the most of all of my herbal trainings, because it really is a direct knowledge that these traditions and these cultures hold about the plants. And so they're in a very first-person way passing along what they know about the plants. So it's incredibly special to have that as a part of my sort of herbal toolkit that I've accumulated along the way and have the blessing of passing along to my students and clients.
Now, how did you connect? Because in my studies, and I've been doing similar connections with indigenous healers around the world for many, many years, since the late 60s, it wasn't always so easy to find the people who might be considered the healers and also to gain their trust to where they do want to share their knowledge with you.
Absolutely. It is, I think, so important, especially those of us with European roots in our lineage, to honor and respect that there is an immense amount of cultural exploitation and appropriation that happens even within what may be considered a very spiritually awakened or culturally elevated community, such as the natural health community. And so for me, the connections that I made were really about being very humble and being very respectful and simply being present and honoring the plants and being in a great attempt of integrity and authenticity in my own life and in my practice. And I feel like that first and foremost, coupled with humility, were really sort of the opportunities that I was then given, the doors that were then opened to me into some of these experiences and some of these situations with different teachers. Again, I can't really overemphasize that there is so much exploitation and appropriation of these cultures. And so as you mentioned, it's certainly not the case that every door is open, and there's not always a welcome mat. And in some instances, for instance, when I was in Guatemala, my role was really kind of initially to assist in a doctor's practice there with very menial tasks, like basically being a janitor and sweeping floors and pulling weeds and not necessarily a very glamorous apprentice type of experience that some people might think about. And it was only after quite a long time and diligence and just continuing to show up with humbleness and respect for the plants day in and day out that, you know, slowly I'd get little breadcrumbs and I would sort of follow that trail, continuing to be mindful and humble in that path and just developing that rapport and that sense of trust. And I think that practicing ourself and in that sense of integrity and practicing that connection with nature is what for many of my teachers really showed them that I had a sincere desire to not just pick up some teachings and take them home and write a book about them as if I knew anything about them, but really just, you know, being there and working with the plants very deliberately and very diligently. I'll also mention that especially in the past 10 years, I would say, I have had many of my teachers of indigenous backgrounds share with me that they were receiving messages from spirit that it was time for the teachings to be more broadly shared, even cross-culturally. So one of the medicine men that I work with in the Yucatan of the Mayan Itza tribe in Mexico, he really, among his peers of other elders of different tribes, has continued to be sort of alluding to the fact that it's time for some of these teachings to be shared more broadly, that the earth really cannot hold on much longer without more and more of us making some shifts in our personal practice and in the way we commune with the earth. And I've heard that echoed in different regions, especially in Central and South America, where I've been traveling in the last decade. And so I do think that there is a bit of an awakening even among these cultures, where there's more and more of a need for those of us in the north and in the west to be honoring the earth. And if that means that these teachings need to be shared for more of our Western culture to be awakened to that need, then that's sort of some of the steps that they're taking by being more willing to share. So
I have definitely discovered that same exact universal thought form that you're sharing. And even years ago, I was studying with a Native American teacher. His name was Sun Bear. And we're talking about a long time ago. And he really did describe that shifting in attitude from keeping things very close under the shirt only for blood relatives. He felt that the consciousness had now expanded to where this kind of information is still shared with sisters and brothers, although it might not be sisters and brothers of the flesh, but of the spirit. And there is that expansion. And another thing is, one of my teachers, Jamba of the Maroons, who's on the north coast of Jamaica, and we'll be visiting him in March, he has 17 children, Emily, and not one of them could care less about herbal medicine and plants.
Wow.
You know, they're just not interested. I mean, they want a modern lifestyle. They want to go to Walmart. You know what I mean? It's just they're not interested at all. And so he was thrilled to find, even though we were not culturally his tribe, people who really are his tribe in the sense of being a brother and sister in the plant consciousness. So that's going on too, and I think that's universally as happening as well. So it's a great gift that you're gleaning this information, because what happens with one of these, when one of these elders pass away?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, that's, I think, definitely also that sense that a lot of ancient cultures are more and more being westernized and globalized, and therefore there's much more of a risk for the teachings to be lost as younger generations become attracted by the dazzle and sparkle of the Western culture and don't necessarily hold the value of their lineage as much as some of us from the outside peering in may see. So absolutely, I think there is definitely that big sense of protecting these teachings so that they can be passed on.
And the beautiful thing that sits in the balance is that someone like yourself, who, of course, is basically a Western person, but very evolved in terms of universal life energy and things that are cultural throughout the world, you are now codifying this and making it accessible to the Western mind through your school, holisticlivingschool.org. I mean, if anyone goes on that site, and I suggest you do, it's so well organized and laid out. I'm talking about from a high-tech perspective, in terms of the courses that you offer, and you use modern technology like DVDs and, you know, little videos and things that really is very high tech, and yet you're bringing through ancient knowledge.
Yeah, we really, in my classes, especially when I'm first meeting students, I really try to impart to them my goal of finding a way for us to bridge ancient teachings into our modern times, because to simply absorb the ancient teachings and to live strictly in that way really loses context and relevance in the busy, bustling, scientific, linear world. And so I think the more that we can use those ancient teachings to inform us and to guide us, but then to find ways to keep that relevant in the context of modern times, that's really where I think the work is for modern herbalists and modern practitioners, is to not lose sight and not forget, really hold dear that memory of our ancestors, and then find ways to translate that so that more people in this busy, bustling modern world can make those connections, can feel more fulfilled and more whole and more healthy. So it's really an integrated approach. We don't want to just completely live in the old days and the old ways, but we want to not lose sight of them either. And I feel like what we experience in the modern world largely is that we have discarded our memory of our ancestors. We even don't honor our elders in the same way that we've done for generations and generations. And so not to discard that importance of our history, but also to find ways to weave that in within the current framework. I feel like we'll be most effective if we can do that, if we can work within the system that's here and not be completely, you know, out of technology and losing touch, because there's a great many benefits that those have brought us. It's simply that we've relied too heavily on the benefits both of modern technology and of modern healthcare technology, and therefore we've really lost the effectiveness of both of those without the informing of the history to be a part of it.
Yeah, and that's something that I think you're doing beautifully. Now, tell us more about the Florida Herbal Conference, because that's only in its third year, but it certainly reflects the fact that there's a huge and growing interest in this kind of medicine, the fact that the conference is growing and that your school attendance is growing.
Absolutely. When we first dreamed up or envisioned putting together the Florida Herbal Conference, it was actually an inspiration by one of my dear mentors, Rosemary Gladstar, who in her living room one day up in Vermont said, you know, there's a lot of herbalists down in Florida. You need to have a conference. And this was probably 2006 or 2007. And I kind of laughed because there weren't that, I wasn't aware of that many herbalists. And at the time, working in Orlando, I felt quite isolated, in fact, in my practice because there wasn't a vibrant herbal community. I didn't really know of many colleagues in my area. And so we started to just kind of explore and feel that call of Rosemary's, and that inspiration continued to well up through the years. And we hosted our first conference in 2012. And I sort of commissioned Rosemary. I said, okay, this is kind of your idea, so you get to come be our first keynote speaker and help us kick this idea off the ground. And we had 300 participants our first year, and it was to the amazement of all of us that there were actually that many people participating in the first year's event. And it was really a testament to the fact that not only was there more herbalism going on in the state of Florida than we realized, but all of us who were practicing around the state shared the desire for more connection, shared the desire for more community. And so in our third year of the conference, we're anticipating approximately 400 people to attend, and last year's conference was about 350. So each year the conference has grown steadily, and I think that's a testament not just to the larger consciousness of natural health spreading throughout our area, but also, again, for that sense of community that we're all really seeking to be supported in our work, to be able to share our work with others, and to be able to share fellowship with others who hold these values and these teachings as dear as each of us may. And so it's been really extraordinary to watch a community blossom around the shared interests of healing plants, and certainly continues to amaze all of us who are working behind the scenes to hold that container.
And you have such an amazingly wide variety of different kinds of presenters. I personally cannot wait to be there. Two people that I've presented with and know very well, for instance, David Winston and Susan Weed, will both be speakers at your conference. And David, I think he is a master of the universe. And I don't say that about a lot of people. David is one of the most knowledgeable and humble herbalists. He's written a plethora of fabulous, fabulous books, a lot of which has research that you can never find anywhere, because I happen to know for a fact, because I know him personally, that he has spent years poring over the old medical eclectic textbooks, which really were what doctors learned not that long ago. And he has that knowledge as well as Native American knowledge, and he has integrated it into a way that, again, other people can learn through his books and his style. And he even told me, Emily, he personally told me not that long ago, we were at a conference together, that he's very excited about going because as knowledgeable as he is, the wild weeds, let's say, the edible and medicinal wild plants of Florida are not something that he's eloquently versed in since his area is the Northeast. So
yeah.
We're all excited about learning more.
Well, we are so grateful that there's so many just amazing teachers, as you mentioned, here in the state of Florida. You know, we bring in guests like David and like Susan, who I'm delighted to have both of them here in Florida to share with our participants. But the remainder of our teaching staff, we focus on teachers who have residence in Florida, even if it's for only part of the year, that are practicing with these plants here. And largely at first that was an effort to build the herbal community in Florida as the intention, but then it quickly became, wow, there are so many talented and incredible practitioners here within the state of Florida that we really want to show that off, and we really want to showcase to the Florida and the greater community that there are some just really gifted and talented and connected teachers in this area that many have been working here for decades and know the plants so intimately and have so much wisdom to share. So it is certainly a beautiful gift to be able to work with all of my colleagues who are teachers at this conference and to learn from them and to really just watch them shine in this capacity because they have so much to share, so many gifts.
So we're going to just take another little break right here on Progressive Radio Network so that people can know about all the great shows that go on here daily and, in fact, 24/7 since you can always listen to them online. And then when we come back, Emily, we'll continue our discussion, and I'd like to focus on a couple of your favorite plants. So we will be right back with more with professional herbalist Emily Ruff. We're talking about FloridaHerbalConference.org and her school, HolisticLivingSchool.org. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And you can hear more anytime on the archives at prn.fm, including today's show with herbalist Emily Ruff. And you can always find out more at naturalnurse.com. Click on books to see the many books that we have written. Click on blog for free articles. Click on career counseling to find out how you can prepare yourself for a career in natural medicine. And click on education to see the many courses that we give, learning how to be more knowledgeable for yourself, your family, or professionally, and also for certificates that are available. And I also invite you to visit Florida HerbalConference.org. If you would like more information about the conference that we're having here in Florida, Emily is running it. I am a participant and a visitor and a learner. Can't wait to be there. And her school, HolisticLivingSchool.org. Very, very organized, beautifully laid out, and a wonderful way to become more knowledgeable in natural medicine for yourself and your family. Thank you so much for being our guest today, Emily.
Ellen, it's been a delightful time. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, with your years and years of really integrating yourself, your consciousness, your life, your profession, with the plants in Florida, let's just talk. You know, we don't have that much time left, but I'd love a little review from you of some of what comes to mind as your favorites.
Oh, sure. It's always so hard to
That's
think
hard.
About.
I know. Whatever
making
pops
that
in
list.
First.
But I want to share kind of with, I think, this time of year in the winter time is when we start to see some herbs sprout up that your listeners in the north may have in the spring and the summer, things like nettles and things like chickweed. We have a very short season of them here in Central Florida. We only really get them in the winter time when most of the rest of the country is buried underneath snow. But one thing that has really been speaking to me in the winter season is that some of our species may be similar but very distinct and different. Nettle is a great example. I spent a lot of time with my students this weekend harvesting nettle. And in the north, most of your listeners will be familiar with nettles as singing nettles with the scientific name Urtica dioica. And with a broad leaf, and it can get, you know, quite tall, maybe 3 feet, 4 feet, and you can harvest it for medicine. You can also cook up the greens. I used to love cooking them when I lived at Rosemary's in Vermont and having them with an omelet in the morning. And in Florida, our nettles is quite small, and it often goes by the name heartleaf nettle as well as singing nettle. Its Latin name is Urtica chamaedroica. Dryotis, I'm probably mispronouncing that, but it's a species which I use in the very same way for medicinal benefits of rich mineral content, supporting the urinary tract, supporting the nervous system, supporting the female reproductive system. But the leaves are probably no bigger than my thumbnail. They're really quite small, and it's interesting because I feel like they make up for their size and their sting, and they can often be much more stinging here in Florida with those small leaves than the larger varieties up in the north. But it's a plant ally that we work with the same way that we would the more northern variety or the variety that we may source at an apothecary, but it's a very distinct species to our region and to the southeast. And so that is sort of one of the real, I think, unique aspects of Florida medicine, is that we have some species that are sister species to temperate, more classical herbal species, but they're just unique to our area. And then, of course, we have tropical species here that don't really grow in a lot of other parts of the world. I'm staring out my window right now at papaya trees, which I use the leaves and the unripe fruit for medicine, and, of course, the ripe fruits I use
for... How would you use it differently? Why would the unripe fruit be used in particular?
The unripe fruit has a latex in the skin that you get more latex from the green skin than you do the ripe one. And you can also use the unripe fruit, as you're probably aware, in salads. Both the ripe and the unripe, the leaves and even the seeds of the fruit are incredible for the digestive system. I use the leaves a lot for tea. I use the leaves a lot for topical purposes. That's not something that people will likely find growing up in New England, and so we have a lot of these tropical species here as well that are just very distinct to our region that we won't find in other parts of the country. I've got some kava kava growing. These are plants, papaya and kava kava, as examples that I'm cultivating, so they're not necessarily something that you'll stumble upon out in the wild parts of Florida, but we can bring them into our garden and have them alongside some of the beautiful pines and oaks that we have unique to this region. And then we have a lot of stray species that find their way into Florida, camphor being an example that we mentioned at the start of the show. Beautiful oils in the leaves that I use a lot for external pain relief. I use very frequently for respiratory opening of the lungs and relieving of congestion as an inhalant. That's an Asian species that has made its home quite prolifically here in Florida. In fact, you might consider it invasive, but at the same time, it still brings a lot of medicine with it. So,
oh, well, definitely. I find things that are called invasive are sometimes the best medicine because they're such hardy plants.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, Timothy Scott, who's an herbalist from Vermont, released a book in 2012 called Invasive Plant Medicine, and I encourage you and your readers both to check that out, your listeners, excuse me, because it really helped me shift my perspective around these invasive plants. And while we certainly don't want to introduce more of them or encourage them to decimate the native ecosystems any more than they may have already, we also want to embrace if they have something to offer them. Let's use those gifts and share them.
Exactly, instead of just, you know, going out and killing them all the time. I mean, they do need to sometimes be brought into, let's say, cultivation so that they don't spread everywhere and completely take over the ecosystem in terms of more traditional plants in the area. But I have found that very often it becomes a balance where they really do become indigenous, because sometimes they're called invasive, but they've been here for hundreds of years. They came over on the Spanish ships.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So it's not like they just came here. Well, those are very interesting ones. Chickweed I certainly see all over, just on the ground right here in Deerfield, which is quite far south. I'm also seeing Gota Cola-like leaves. That
all
I believe,
over the place.
Yeah, and that's a very medicinal plant. Of course, it's honored greatly in Asia.
Absolutely. And, you know, with chickweed, it's interesting because we have a tropical variety of that as well, which I often call tropical chickweed. It goes by the name Dry Mary in the Caribbean islands, Drymaria cordata, and it looks very similar and has incredibly similar effects to temperate chickweed, Stellaria media. The interesting thing in Central Florida is that we get Stellaria media in the wintertime when that tropical chickweed is kind of hiding back a little bit from the cold temperatures in Orlando. And then as soon as the weather warms, that temperate Stellaria media starts to die back, and then Drymaria cordata just comes back in full bloom. So we get chickweed 12 months of the year between the two species, which is pretty unique.
And so many wonderful things. Well, believe it or not, our time is up. The show has gone so quickly, and I very much look forward to meeting you in person at the Florida Herbal Conference. Visit floridaherbalconference.org. It's the last week in February to beginning of March this year. We're listening to this show in 2014, but sometimes we replay the show, so just visit the floridaherbalconference.org anytime to find out when the next one is coming up. And also holisticlivingschool.org to connect with Emily, find out more about her work. And you don't have to be in Florida, because she has excellent home study and online classes available. Until next week, this is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and on behalf of myself and my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, as always, we're wishing you the best. Visit us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. And until next time, we hope that you stay healthy.